We're holding on test Zion Omidbey's four lines from the bottom. We talked about yesterday about the city of Talmud, or about the city of Talmud, where there were people over there. One opinion is that Abdei Shloima, that slaves of Shloima, ran away there. And another opinion is and married Jewish women. Another one is that the Goyim from there captured Jewish women at the times of the Churban. Whatever the case, we said that in that case, now there are different opinions about when the father is a goy and the mother is a Jew, or the children Jewish or not. Lahalacha, we know, unfortunately, Maisim B'chol Yoyim, that we have such cases, and we know that the children are Lahalacha Jewish. However, the Gemara is saying that there are different opinions about it, and there are opinions that the children are Mamzeri. So therefore, so we brought different opinions whether we're allowed to accept Gerim from such places, because are we introducing Mamzerim into the Jewish people? So now, continuing on that topic, or related topic, Amr of Yehuda, Amr of Asi, if nowadays a Goy is Mekadosh, a Jewish woman, you have to be concerned that it was a valid Kedushin, meaning that she's going to need a get. Because this Goy might actually be descended from the Aseres HaShvatim. So here we're talking, so Rashi says we're talking now the other way around. Yesterday we were talking about where a Goyish man has relations with a Jewish woman and they have a child. Here Rashi learns we're saying the other way around. The men of the Aseres HaShvatim who went into Golos in these areas, they intermarried with Goyish, they married Goyish women and they had children. And the Rashi says that Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav Asi is following the opinion over here that such children are considered Jews but are mamzerim. So again, you have the problem that the man who was Makadish, he might actually be a descendant of such a family, and therefore he's a mamzer and the morning on. And therefore that would be a problem. His kedushin are chal, but we can't have him marry her. Tosfos says,
regarding the Aseres HaShvatim, what is the exact position of the halacha? Because in some areas they never followed the halacha, or they didn't.
I don't know. For the most part, the Aseres HaShvatim did follow halacha. They were steeped in Avodah Zarah and in various other problems. But by and large, they did follow halacha in the areas where it didn't impinge on the Avodah Zarah or whatever. So no, that's not the issue. And the fact is, it doesn't matter. Yisrael af mishachati Yisrael. We're going to get to soon something about the Aseres HaShvatim and their status as Jews. We'll get back to that. Right now, we're starting with the assumption that they're full-fledged Jews, just like you and me. But now, unfortunately, if in their Golos they went and married Goyish women, so Rashi is taking the view that we're talking about that now their children would be, according to one opinion, would be considered Jews, but they would be considered Mamzerim, and therefore that would be a problem. Tosfos now says, one second, since when? We know that Jewishness goes according to the mother, and Tosfos brings various proofs for that, which actually we're going to be talking about soon in the Gemara over here. So what are you talking about? So Tosfos says that no, the other way around. Rabbi Yehuda Amar of Asi is concerned about that there were Jewish women who went into Golos over there from the Aseres HaShvatim and then were married to Goyish men. And again, we had the opinions before in the Gemara that children from such unions are considered mamzerim, which again, let's stress, the accepted halacha is not like that. The accepted halacha is that such children are ksherim. But nevertheless, there exists the opinion that they are considered mamzerim, and therefore, again, that's the problem. They might actually be Jews, so now they're assimilated. They look like goyim, but really they're Jews and mamzerim, and therefore, that would be a problem. Therefore, that would be a problem if he does kedushin. That again, the kedushin are tofus, but you don't want her to marry him, and therefore, we're going to require a get. So the question is, the Gemara asks, well, the cult, why do we even need to be concerned about that this Goy who comes before us might actually be a descendant of the Aseres HaShvatim, well, called the Parish, Meruba Parish. Don't we have a general rule that we go according to Roy? When one person separates himself from the majority, then we go according to the majority. The majority of Goyim, the majority of people in the world are full-fledged Goyim, not descended from the Aseres HaShvatim. Why should we have to be concerned that this random Goy who came in front of us is actually a Yid? And the answer is beduchta dikvi. The answer is we're talking about in the area where they are settled. Now, we have a rule of kol kavua kemetzal mechta dummy. When you have in halacha, when we have something fixed in its place, then we consider it not, even if numerically it's a minority, but la halacha we consider as though it's 50-50. The classic example you have, for example, Teisha Chanuyas Merchus Pesach Shchuta, where you have 9 stores in town selling non-kosher meat and one selling kosher meat and one selling non-kosher meat, and you went and bought by one of the stores and you don't remember which one now. So you have to consider a 50-50 chance because the stores are kavua, they're fixed in place. The same idea over here, Rashi says, we're talking about that in the places, which now we're going to list in the Gemara, where the Aseres HaShvatim were sent into Golos, then they are kavua over there. Tosfos learns differently and says it's not really a matter of kavua. It's, the Gemara is using the word kavua over here, but what it means is that we're talking about the areas where the Aseres HaShvatim were actually the majority. There were areas among the ones where Sancheirav took them into Golos, where they wound up constituting the majority of the population, and therefore it's not even a matter of kavua. The odds are that any goy who comes from the, that any person who comes from those places is in fact a descendant of the Aseres HaShvatim, which again, according to Rashi, would mean he's a descendant on his father's side, but we're following an opinion that he might be considered a yid. And according to Tosfos, we're talking about that he might be from the Aseres HaShvatim on his mother's side, and we're following the opinion that such people are considered mamzer. So what are these places? The Amr of Abba Bakahana, the Pasuk says, when they were taken into Golos, Vayanchem, that Sancheirav led them, Vachalach uvachover, Nahar Gozan v'orei modah. So let's define what each of those places are in terms of places that were more familiar in the times of the Gemara. Chalach zachilozen. In the times of the Gemara, the place was called Chilozin. V'chover Chilozin is some area. All these places that we're going to list are in areas that are nowadays parts of Iraq or Iran or maybe parts of Turkey or Azerbaijan or whatever, places in that part of the world. So Chalach Zachilozin. V'chover Zuchadiev. Chadiev is an area nowadays in northern Iraq and maybe western Turkey, eastern Turkey. Nahau Gozan Zuginzak, which is a city in Iran, Ba'ore Modai Zuchamdan Machabre Seha, the cities of Modai refers to Hamadan, which is also an important city in Iran, Machabre Seha and the other nearby towns, Ba'amilo Zumihar Machabre Seha, others say that it refers to Nihar and the cities near it. So Chabre Seha Man, what do we mean by Chabre Seha? What do we mean by its fellow cities, so those are the various places in what now Iraq, Iran, different other, Azerbaijan, Turkey, whatever, different places in that part of the world, those are the areas where the Aseres HaShvatim were taken to, and therefore we're saying, so according to Rashi, even if they're not numerically the majority, they're called kavua over there, and according to Tosfos, we're talking about areas where they are actually numerically the majority. So those are the areas where Rav Asi is saying that we have to be concerned about that they might actually be Jews, and then if they're Makadish, a Jewish woman, it might be a valid Kiddushin. However, continues Rabbi Yehuda, Ki Amrita Kameh de Shmuel, when I told over the statement of Rav Asi to Shmuel, Rashi explains that after Rav Asi had passed away, so Rabbi Yehuda used to be a Talmud by Rav Asi and by Rav. After Rav Asi passed away, and later on after Rav passed away, then he went and became a Talmud of Shmuel. And that's why most of the time in the Gemara we find Rabbi Yehuda saying in the name of Shmuel. Anyway, so when I told this over to Shmuel, Omar Lee, he says to me, that's not correct. There's no problem over here, because we know as far as the rules of when you have an intermarriage or an interrelationship between Jews and Goyim, the rules are, Bincha bom in Yisraelis kore bincha, when you have a child from a Jewish woman, then it's called your son. Meaning, in other words, that even if the father is a goy, then the child is considered a Jew. The ein bincha abomina vedes kachovim kori bincha el abna. But if you, a Jew, have a son, Rachman Otzlan, from a goyta, then he's not called your son; he's called her son. Meaning that Yiddishkeit goes according to the mother, as we all know. So Rashi and Tosfos discussed exactly how we learn that from the Pesukim. You have a Pesuk at the end of Parshas Vayeshanan that warns, don't intermarry with the Goyim, ki yosir es bincha me'achrai. He will remove your son from following me. So Rashi says what it means is that it means if you allow your daughter to marry a Goy, then what's going to happen is the child is going to be considered Jewish, but he, the father, is going to take away your son from meaning your grandson, from following Hashem. In other words, he's going to start raising him as a goy, and the kid is going to grow up thinking that he's a goy and acting like a goy. On the other hand, the pasuk doesn't say he's so serious bincha that she will remove your son, implying, in other words, that if your son, Rahman al-Flan, marries a goita and they have a child, we can't say that she, the goyish wife, will cause your descendant, meaning your grandchild, to go away from Hashem, because they're already away from Hashem. They're considered a goy. So therefore, we see that it goes according to the mother. And Tosfos discusses in some detail about the details of that drasha, and whether there's another way of learning learning the drasha. Maybe the ki yasir or ki sasir refers to yom chotanim. Whatever the case, the point is that that's how the halacha is known like that. That it means that only if the mother is Jewish is the child Jewish. So if we say, like Rashi, that the problem is that Jewish men from the Aseret HaShvatim married Goyish women when they were in Golos, then Shmuel is saying the children are going to be Goyim. So, like any other Goy, if they're Mekadosh a Jewish woman, nothing happens. Therefore, you don't need to worry about it. So the Gemara asks, that takes care of the boys. But what about the women? What about the girls and the women? Va'ika bonis, aren't there women, Jewish women, who were taken captive of the Aseret HaShvatim, and they married Goyim, and they had children, and those children would be Jewish? Va'amar Rabina, and Rabina says, from what we just said, from the Pasuk, Ki Yosir is Bincha Me'achrai, Shmamina, we see from that drasha from the Pasuk, Ben Bitcha Bamina Ovit Kechavim Kori Bincha, that if your daughter, that if a Jew's daughter is married to or in a relationship with a goy and they have a child, so ben bitcha, your daughter's son, habomina ovid kachavim, where his father was a goy, kori bincha, is called your son, meaning that he's considered your descendant of Yalacha, and he's considered a Jew. So don't you have to find, even if you're taking care of half of the population, so the Aseret HaShvatim, when they went into Golos, there were men and there were women. So the men, you're saying if they married goyim, no problem. But what about the women if they married goyim? Don't you still have that their children are Jews, and that could continue for generations on? And then you're back to what Rav Asi had said, that there might conceivably be somebody there who appears to all intents and purposes to be a goy, but really is a yid. So the answer is, the Gemara says, Gemiri, we have the Kabbalah, the Binsa Dahu Dara Itzteruye Itzteru. The women of that generation who were taken into Golos of the Aseret HaShvatim became Itzteruye Itzteru, means they became infertile. Literally, Rashi explains, the word Itzteruye comes from a word that means split. Their wombs split open and they became infertile. They were unable to have children. A couple of the Rishonim talk about how that might have happened. Among them are the women might have deliberately disfigured themselves or harmed themselves in order to avoid the goyim being attracted to them, or in order to avoid the goyim impregnating them. It might be the Tosfos Rid says that the goyim raped them so many times that it damaged their reproductive organs. Whatever it is exactly, they all became infertile, and therefore there's no issue that they had children. And now the question is, what happens with those children? Aren't they Jews? Because their mothers were Jews, because there were no children. Now, Tosfos earlier says, Rav Asi evidently disagreed with that idea, given that Tosfos says, Rav Asi was talking about that, was talking about the scenario where you have Jewish women who had children from Goyish men. Obviously, he disagrees with the statement of Shmuel with the statement over here that it's Deruya Itzteru. So he would hold that there were in fact children, and therefore it could continue throughout the generations. Ikadam, but according to Shmuel, they were saying that there's not. The men may have stayed fertile, but if they marry Goyish women, then their children are considered Goyim anyway. And the women were all infertile, and therefore they didn't have any children. So in the next generation, in other words, there's no descendants of theirs who are Jews. Ikadamri, another version is that Rabbi Yehuda says, Ki Amrita Kameh to Shmuel, that when I told over the statement of Rav Asi to Shmuel, the second version is, Amali, he said to me that no, there's not an issue that these descendants of the Aseret HaShevatim might conceivably be Jews, because loy zozo misham ad shasom oy b'techav gmurim. The Chachamim did not move from there. In other words, as soon as the Aseret HaShevatim were taken into Golos, and they realized there's this potential problem, you have a huge number of Jews in Golos who are going to end up intermarrying with the Goyim. So then, loy zozo misham, Shmuel says, according to the second version, the Chachamim did not move from there right away, on the spot, ad shasom oy b'techav gmurim. They declared them, for purposes of this halacha, to be complete Goyim. So therefore, if in the next generation one of them is Makadish, a Jewish woman, nothing happens. It's like a goy being Makadish. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Bashem Bogodu, the Pasuk says, in fact, about the Aseret HaShevatim, they rebelled against Hashem, Ki Bonim Zorim Yolodu, because they gave birth to foreign children. So even while they were in Eretz Yisrael, there were some people, we're not saying the whole Jewish people, by and large, we said before, the Jewish people collectively did keep mitzvahs, but there were people over there already in while they were still in their land who were marrying goyim. And now we're saying kibonim zorim yoladu, that the Chachamim declared after they went into Golos that we consider that all of them are considered goyim, and therefore that their kiddushin are not going to be of any validity. Now, what does that mean? So actually, the Keren Ora over here on our Gemara says it doesn't mean they declared them to be goyim for all purposes. Strictly as far as purposes of Kiddushin. When it comes to Kiddushin, the Chachamim have a little bit of latitude, because you have a concept that the Gemara says, we're going to come across it in various places, in Seder Noshim, that Afki'inu Rabbonin LeKiddushin, that given that Kiddushin are done Kedas Moshe of Israel, the Chachamim have the ability in certain emergency cases to say that the Kiddushin are not valid. So that's in effect what they're doing over here. They're saying in advance, says Shmuel, according to this Lashon, that if any man from these areas in Mekadesh Abbas Yisrael, we are going to ahead of time be mevatel that kedushin and say that it's not chal. Doesn't mean that for all other purposes we would consider them to be goyim. If we ever find that one of them, in fact, that his mother's mother, etc., was from the Aseret HaShevatim, then in fact he would be a yid. When it comes to a mumer, when it comes to a mishumad, Rahman al-Tlan, and their children, there are some opinions among the Rishonim who say that our Gemara would imply that they can be considered goyim, meaning that even if according to them, you would say, for example, that if a Jewish woman became a mishumad, Rahman al-Tlan, and that then her children might already be considered goyim. However, the majority opinion among the poskim is not like that. And in fact, the Rashbash, yesterday we talked about yesterday I think we may have mentioned the Rashbash, one of the later Rishonim. Now we have the Rashbash, his son, who was also a distinguished Rav, and he writes explicitly that no, we're saying over here something about the Aseret HaShevatim, but with that single exception, we don't say, no matter what, Yisrael ach mishachot Yisraelu, you may have a person who for generations has been living among the Goyim, and as far as he knows, he's a Goy, but then we trace back and we find that his great, 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 however many times grandmother was a Jew, then he's considered to be a Jew. Now, we don't have to be choshish for it on a day-to-day basis, because, like we said before in the Gemara, called the Parish, Meruba Parish, the majority of people in the world are Goyim. But nevertheless, if he finds it a thing, then nevertheless, we still say that he's a Yid, no matter how many generations his family has lived assimilated among the Goyim. Continues the Gemara. When Mashiach comes, no Jew will be left behind, and you have Psukim that say that. Yechezkel says, Hashem says, I won't leave one single Yid behind in Golos. It means such people as well. It means that you can have people who for generations have been living and thinking that they're Goyim, and now when Mashiach comes, then we're going to discover all of a sudden that they're Jews. Continues the Gemara. Yosef Rav Yosef Achore de Rav Kahana. One time Rabbi Yosef was sitting in the yeshiva behind Rav Kahana. The senior Talmidim used to sit towards the front. The junior Talmidim would sit towards the back. So Rabbi Yosef was one of the junior Talmidim at that point. The Yosef Rav Kahana Kamei de Rav Yehuda. Rav Kahana was sitting in one of the front rows in front of Rav Yehuda. The Yosef V'Ka'amar, he was sitting and saying, the he could mean the pashtus means Rabbi Yosef. That even though Rabbi Yosef was one of the junior Talmidim, he said the following statement. Asidin Yisrael de Avi Yomatova ki Chayvi Talmud. The Jewish people in the future are going to make a Yom Tov on the day that Talmud is destroyed. So now we're going back to, we said before that Talmud was contained people who were psulim. We said before they're contained over there a very high proportion of mamzerim. So Rashi explains that's the vote. They're mamzerim, but they end up intermarrying with Jews, and therefore they create more and more mamzerim among the Jewish people. So therefore, the Jewish people are going to make a yomtiv when that city is eventually destroyed, and that problem goes away. There's a different explanation. I think the Oruch Haner points to the fact we talked about yesterday that the Talmudim were involved. They participated in Churban Bayis Rishon and Churban Bayis Sheni. And in that sense, also, we're saying we're going to make a yomtiv when that city is destroyed because of what they did to the Jewish people. So the Gemara asks the Hachariv. As a matter of fact, Talmud did get destroyed, and we don't see they made a yomtiv for it. And the answer is that he Talmud Havoi. That wasn't Talmud with a resh that got destroyed, but rather Talmud without the resh. Different place. On the other hand, Rav Ashi Amar Hainu Talmud Hainu Talmud. Rav Ashi says no, they are actually the same place. But Ichpuli Hud Michbo. What happened was, it was rebuilt. The part, not rebuilt, but part of it remained built all the time. Ichpuli Hud Michbo means it's like a double city. When the city was destroyed, on one side, it was still settled and still well-established on the other side. In other words, the idea being, it was a very big city, and even when part of it was destroyed, the other part still remained intact. And when the other part was destroyed, then by that time, the first one had been rebuilt. So there was never a time, Rav Ashi is saying, when the entire city was destroyed. If that happens, or when that happens, then they are going to make a yomtiv of it. So nowadays, I mean, the city of Talmud is in English, it's called Palmyra. It's located nowadays in Syria, in eastern Syria. They have, I mean, I don't know if anybody lives there anymore. Maybe I guess some Bedouins live there now. For the most part, they have major ruins over there that's one of those World Heritage sites. But so eventually, at some point, it did actually get destroyed. I guess if they made a yomtiv of it, then that yomtiv has been long forgotten. I don't know. Okay, getting back now to Psula Yichus, where we said now that you have these places where you have Mamzerim and other such problems. So now, even within Bavel itself, you had such issues. There were areas within Bavel where there were Psula Yichus, and now we're going to discuss that point. So Yosef Rav Hamnuna Kameja Ula, Rav Hamnuna was sitting as a Talmud in front of Ula, but Kahavi B'Shmaita, and he was discussing and he was asking questions in a statement in Torah, not necessarily the topic that we were talking about before, but some topic in Torah that Rav Hamnuna was asking Ula good questions and bringing up good points. So Ula was very impressed. Omar, he says, Ma Gavra, what a man, or Hagoy Tabach changes the second one to Ma Gavra, Ma Gubre, what a man and how powerful is his strength. In other words, I'm very impressed with you. E loved how Panya Mose. If it weren't for the fact, it's such a pity that you come from the city of Harpanya, which, as the Gemara is going to say shortly, the people in Harpanya do not have good yichus. There are many psula yichus mikno, many mamzerim and whatever mixed in among the people of the city over there. So Ula is saying, I'm very impressed by you. It's a pity that you come from such a place where the people lack yichus. Ichse. So Rav Hamnuna was embarrassed by that. Omale, so Ula asks him, Kesef Gugalta Lahecha Yavas, let me ask you, where do you pay, in which city do you pay your head tax? A head tax is one of the taxes they had in those days, where you have to pay it just by virtue of the fact that you live in the country, regardless, not an income tax, not a property tax, not whatever, just for the fact that you exist and live in the country, then you have to pay a certain tax. So where do you pay that tax? Omale Lepumnara. So Rav Hamnuna tells him, I pay it to Pumnara. So Ula says, in that case, then you don't have to worry. It can be Pumnara. In that case, you're actually considered to be from Pumnara. You're not really from Harpanya. So therefore, there's nothing for you to be offended about what I just said. In other words, that even though you may tackle your family comes from Harpanya, but nevertheless, you yourself are actually somebody from Pumnara, which is a city of Jews. We mentioned it yesterday in the Gemara, and they are legitimate. They are shaved. Now, why is Ula bringing up the point in the first place? And what is he trying to embarrass Rav Hamnuna? So there's an explanation from Reb Tzadik HaKoyen that says, with the Gemara mentions elsewhere, that Harpanya had very delicious fruit. and that kind of thing would help a person be able to learn better. So Ulla is first mentioning about Harpanya, meaning in other words that you have the advantage that you come from Harpanya and you ate the food over there, and that helped you become this great Talmid Chacham that you are. But don't think that it means that you're stuck being a Harpanian. The fact is, really, you're from Pum, really you're from Pumnara, as we see from the fact that you pay your taxes over there. So the fact that you grew up in Harpanya gave you the advantage that you were able to eat the delicious fruit from there and become the great Talmid Chacham that you are. But in reality, you don't really belong to there. You really belong to Pumnara. So the Gemara continues, my Harpanya. Why is the place called Harpanya? It means it's the mountain where everybody turns to it, meaning everybody who lacks yichus. And you have to remember, Gemara terminology, yichus doesn't mean like we think of it nowadays. My grandfather was a famous Rav. My great grandfather was a famous Rebbe, etc. Yichus in Gemara terminology means that your ancestors don't include any mamzerim or nesinim or other people like that. So now, Harsha called Ponin Boy. So now you have the Harpanya is the area, the mountain where everybody who's psula yichus, everybody who has in their ancestry mamzerim or nesinim or chalolim or what have you, turns to there to find wives because they know they're not going to find in the rest of Babel, and most in the rest of Babel the people had yichus and they wouldn't want to intermarry with such people because that would affect their children as well. So therefore everybody who is stuck like that, who can't get married because of their lack of yichus, would go to Harpanya. The Masnisatana in a Braisa we learn similarly. Anybody who doesn't know what family and what Shevet he's from, Nifna Lasham would go over there to find a wife. So not just people who actually know that they have Psula Yichus in their family, but even people who lost their Yichus completely and they have no idea who their ancestors were, so were their Shadim among them, were their Psulim, they would also go there to find wives. So Omar Rava v'hi amuka mishoil. Rava says this place Harpanya, we just called it Har, a mountain, but really you should know. Rashi says the Gemara says v'hi amuka mishoil. It's deeper than Sheol, which means Gehenna. In other words, it's worse. It may be a Har. It may be geographically. It may be a mountain, but in terms of its status, it's worse off than Gehenna because Rashi explains, as the Gemara is going to say, people who are in Gehenim eventually are going to get out of it. Whereas people from Harpanya, who are posel, there's no takana for them. There's no way of fixing up their psula yichus. Shenema, miyad sha'ol lefdem. Hashem says, I will rescue them from sha'ol. Mimoves agolem, I'll redeem them from death. So we see that even a person dies and goes to Gehenim, eventually Hashem redeems him and takes him out of there. Ve'ilu psul didhu, leslu takanta. Whereas the psul of the people of Harpanya, there's no way of fixing it up. So in that sense, they're worse off than Sheol. Now, the Gemara says, how did this develop? How did this place, Harpanya, end up being the magnet for all the Psula Yichus? Well, Psula de Harpanya, Mishum Psula de Mishun. The reason was because Harpanya is located near an area of Babel called Mishun, which is, the Gemara mentions, in particular in Kiddushin, there's a long sugya about this matter of the geography of Babel and where the people are Miyuchas and where they're not. And the Gemara mentions over there, Mishun Mesa, that Mishun, in terms of Yuchsin, is dead, because in other words, the people over there are mostly Psulim, and since Harpanya was near there, so therefore they tended to intermarry with the Jews of Mishun, and therefore that meant that the Psulim of Mishun spread to Harpanya. Upsula de Mishun, Mishun Psula de Talmud. In turn, how did Mishun develop in that way? Because they intermarried with people from Talmud. Psula de Talmud, Mishum Abde Shloimer, and as we said before, the Psulim of Talmud ultimately goes back to the fact that slaves of Shloima went over there and established a colony and ended up marrying Jewish women. So you have that soul went from one place to another. So in fact, Tosva says, it may be that in Talmud it was mostly Goyim, in Mishon it was mostly Jews, but nevertheless the soul still spread from one to the other. Behind the Amri Inchi, this is like the expression people say in this connection, Kaba Rabba Kaba Zuta, the oversized cab and the undersized cab, meaning we know the Torah tells us you have to have honest weights and measures, but of course people didn't always do that. Sometimes people would have an underweight or an overweight thing, which they call a cab. So both of those refer to dishonest weights and therefore to dishonest people. So psulim in general, migandev ozel, that rolls and it goes, it starts rolling downhill, l'sh'ol, it goes and rolls into Gehenna, or m'sh'ol l'tamud, and from there it rolls to Talmud, because we said that Talmud is even worse off than Gehenna, because the psulim over there, there's no takana for them, or m'tamud l'mishon, and m'mishon l'arpanya, so it goes like that, from place to, from one possible place to another. And why we mention in two kavim, Marsha explains, because the Gemara in Kedushin tells us, you have the famous Gemara over there about a Sora kavim, that 10 kavim of various kinds of things came out and came down to the world, and each one, 9 of them was taken by one place or one group, and one by the rest of the world. So there it mentions, there's 10 kavim of Azus, of Chutzpah, of which 9 went to Mishon, because we said since Mishon had many mamzerim, they were chutzpahdik. And then also it mentions over there in the Gemara that there were 10 kavim of laziness came to the world, and Avodim took 9 of them. So therefore that refers to these two places, Talmud, which was settled by slaves of Shlomo, and Mishon, which was settled by mamzerim. And therefore that's why we're mentioning the two kavim. So those two kavim started out in those areas, and they're rolling around from place to place. Hadron Loch Chamesh Esri Nashim. Now we're going to go back to, after digressing these last few blocks, we're going to go back to now matters of Yibum and Chalitza. So we said...
Before we switch to Yibum and Chalitza, in terms of Allah, a Jew is presumed to be Jewish and kosher, or does he have to prove it?
In general, the rule is in Shulchan Aruch that if a person comes before us and claims to be a Jew, then we can take him at his word. However, in Shulchan Aruch, it says that actually when it comes to marriage, you do have to check more carefully, because Maila also be Yuchsin, the Chacham made extra rules when it comes to Yuchsin, that there you have to have a little more proof. That's when you have any reason to suspect that there could be anything wrong. If a regular frum yid comes off the street and tells you that he's a yid, and you see he's been acting as a yid, then you don't necessarily need any proof. Again, maybe as far as marriage, you do, just to make sure that there's no mamzerim or whatever involved. When you have, for example, a person comes and claims that he's a ger, then it's a little more complicated, because if we knew him before and we knew that he's a goy, and now he turns up and says that he's a ger, then we need a little more proof that his gerus was actually valid. So it does get complicated sometimes, and of course nowadays it gets further complicated with the whole Mir Yehudi thing, that you have people who think that they're Jews and in reality are goyim, because, for example, they're following the Israeli government's definition or the Reform definition, that because their father was a Jew, then they were Jew, and they don't realize that that's not al pi halacha. So sometimes it does get complicated, but by and large, a person walks into your shul off the street, and looks like a yid, then yeah, you can count him for a minyan. And then so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So now, at the beginning of the Masechta, we talked about the Chamesh Esrei Nashim. We said that there are 15 cases where the wife of one brother is related to the other brother in a way that would make her an erva to the second brother. And therefore, we said that she and her tzara and so forth are fossil. Now, one are potter from Chalitza and Yibum. And we said, according to Beis Hillel, not only potter, they're actually osir, whereas according to Beis Shammai, not. Anyway, so the last of the 15 cases, which now the missionary is going to take up, was Eishes Achiv Shaloi Hayabai Laman, where you have, so the scenario is, we can look, if you want to look at the diagrams I sent from Mara Yavamis, then you have diagram 69 illustrates that you have, so we're going to have Eishes Achiv Shaloi Hayabai Laman, a brother who was born but was not in the world at the same time as his earlier brother. So Kate said, Eishes Achim Shalai by Lamai. What's the scenario? Shnei Achim, if you have two brothers, Reuben and Shimon, or Mes Echad Mehen, one of them, Reuben, died, V'Nodah Lehen Och, afterwards a brother, Levi, was born, V'Achakach Yibim Ashenius Eishes Achim, then Shimon did Yibum with the wife of his brother, Reuben, who Esther over here in the diagram, Umes Harishona, and then Umes, and then Shimon dies as well. So now the question is, does Levi have to do Yibum with either one of the women? Well, no. Harishona Yotza Mishum Eishes Achiv Shaloi Hayabai Lamai. The first one, Esther, is Potter from Yibum with Levi and Chalitza because he was not in the world at the same time as Reuven. And as
what diagram?
This is diagram 69.
69.
So page 35 in the booklet. So Levi was born only after Reuben died, and we're saying it was before Shimon did Yibum with Esther. Now later on your Chesamah days, we're going to learn a Mishnah. What happens if the order of things was a little bit different? What about if Reuben died, Shimon did Yibum to Esther, and then Levi was born? Then you have a machlokas with Shimon and the Chachamim, whether Levi has a zikah to Esther and to Chana. That will deal with on Yud Ches Amud Beis, and we're going to deal with also over there whether Reb Shimon would disagree in Arm Mishnah or whether in Arm Mishnah he agreed. But in any case, right now we're talking in Arm Mishnah where Levi was born between Reuben dying and Shimon doing Yibum with Esther. So the order is Reuben dies, Levi is born, Shimon does Yibum with Esther, then Shimon dies. So now, so the first wife, Esther, is potter from Yibum or Chalitza with Levi, because Levi was not in the world at the same time as Reuben, and as we're going to learn on Amud Beis, we have a source in a pasuk to tell us that in that case, then Yibum or Chalitza are not allowed, and that Yibum is not allowed, and as usual, we have when Yibum was not allowed, then Midaraisa, then she's also to him as Eshes Achiv, then she's also to him under the erva of his brother's wife. So that's the first one. Vashniya Mishum Tsarasa. The second one, Chana, in this diagram, is also potter because she was the tsara of his erva. Given that Esther is an erva to Levi, on the grounds that she was the wife of his brother who wasn't Bar Lama, who wasn't in the world at the same time as him, then Chana is her tsara, and as we had in the first Mishnah of Or Masechta, then the erva potter is her tsara as well. Now, what about, on the other hand, Osaba Maimer Mes? What happens, on the other hand, if Shimon didn't actually do Yibum with Esther? He only did Maimer. So we talked briefly about the other day. We're going to have in much more detail in our Perek and the following Perekim. Maimer is Kiddushin. When it comes to a regular marriage, we call it Kiddushin. When it comes to Yibum, we call it Maimer. Maimer does not create a complete kinyan. You need bia for that. However, the Chachamim made a takana that you shouldn't just do Yibum. Really, Yibum by itself would just involve bia. But the Chachamim made a takana, you shouldn't do that. You should do Maimer first. Now the Maimer itself does not actually accomplish Yibum because you need bia for that. However, so therefore the Zika still exists. However, what it does is it makes that the other brothers cannot now do Yibum with this Yavama. So we're going to talk about those scenarios in much more detail later on in the Masechta. But right now, what we have is, so Reuben had been married to Esther. He passed away. Shimon now did not yet do Yibum with Esther. He only did Maimer with her, Umes, and now he died. So now the problem is, on a Daraisa level, Shimon's wife, Chana, is up for Yibum. She's not related. She's not an erva to Levi. Levi was in the world at the same time as Shimon. He was born before Shimon died. So therefore, Chana should be up for Yibum on a Daraisa level. However, on a Darabanan level, Shimon is already considered married to Esther because of the Maimer. So therefore, you have that now Chana is Midrabanan, the tzara of an erva. So as usual, Shnei Chaletzes for Levi's Yabemis. So the usual rule is going to apply. So Esther doesn't need anything because no matter how you look at it, because the fact is she still is the fact is she still was Reuben's wife, and as Reuben's wife who was not contemporary with Levi, then she's Eshes Achiv Shalohei by Lama, and she's an heir to Levi. So Esther doesn't need anything, but Chana is going to need Chalitza because on a Daraisa level there is a Zika over here. Okay. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Nachman, mandatoni rishona loy mishtabish, mandatoni shnia loy mishtabish. Now, when we say we have these two women over here, and let's talk about Esther, where she now is, we can discuss how, in a certain sense, she's twice over available for Yibum to Levi, except we're saying that not, because she's Eshes Achiv Shalohei by Lamai. Because first she was married to Reuben, and then she did Yibum with Shimon. So if we call her Rishona, if we call the Esther in this diagram, if we call her Rishona loy mishtabish, then that's not a mistake. Umandatani shnia loy mishtabish. And if you call her the second one, it's also not a mistake. Don't think, in other words, Rav Nachman is saying, there are different versions of the Mishnah going around. Some who say that Rishona yotzes mishum eishes achiv shalai balamai, and some say shnia. Don't think that one of them is a mistake. Both of them have good grounds for calling her that. mandatory Rishona. If we call her the first, then established, and that's not a mistake, it's my Rishona, Rishona Lenefila, because she's the first one who came up for Yibum. When her husband Reuven died, then she was Nachla the Yibum to Shimon. So therefore, in that sense, she can be called the first relative to Chana, who was only the second one to come up for Yibum. On the other hand, if you call Esther Shnia, that's also not a mistake. My Shnia, Shnia Lenisuin, because it means that she's the second one to get married, because Shimon was already married to Chana when Yibum came up, and now he's marrying Esther as a second wife. Someone says, why? What does that mean? Milaya skin into Yibum v'achakachonas? Why? It doesn't necessarily have to be the order that Shimon was already married to Chana and then he did Yibum with Esther. It could just as well be the other way around. He did Yibum with Esther and later on he married Chana. That wouldn't justify calling Esther the second one. So you're right. Elamai shnia shnia b'nisuin. No, you're right. The reason why we could call Esther the second one is because because this is going to be her second marriage. Because she was married to Reuven, then she did Yibum with Shimon. So that was already her second marriage. So in that sense, she can be called Shnia, even if in fact she is Shimon's first wife, because this is her second husband. Okay, so that's a linguistic point about how the Mishnah is phrased. Now, let's get to the actual din. Where does it say anything in the pasuk that you're not allowed to do Yibum and therefore that you don't need chalitza, that there's no zika at all, with Eishes Achiv Shalai Hai Bai Lamai? The other one, the other 14 that we mentioned at the beginning of the Masechta, all of those are Arayas, and all of those Arayas are listed in the Psukim, or we said as far as a daughter, we have a Gzera Shava that teaches us that she's Osir. But where do we find anything about Eishes Achiv Shalai Hai Bai Lamai? So Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav Amar Kro, because the pasuk introduces the concept of Yibum by saying ki yeshu achim yachdav, when brothers live together, implying shahoy salam yeshiva achas ba'olam. So therefore, that implies that they had one common living, one common settlement in the world, meaning prafla yeshazachim shalayhe ba'olamay, as opposed to when a brother was born after the first one already passed away, which is the scenario we have over here, where Levi was born only after Reuven passed away. So therefore, the pasuk is saying that only when Yeshu Achim Yachdav, only when they're living contemporary in the world, only then would we say that they're Chayiv and Yibum. But if not, then not. And again, where they're not Chayiv and Yibum means they're Osir and Yibum because she is Eishes Achim, because she's his brother's wife, and there's no mitzvah of Yibum. Tosfos, by the way, points out that we should have a different reason to say anyway that it shouldn't be possible, because what's going to happen if we're going to say that Eishes Achiv Shalayhei Ba'olamai could do Yibum, it would mean that poor Esther is stuck forever. She can never get married until she can never remarry until Reuven's father dies, because Reuven's father could always father more children afterwards, and that would go against Drachei Darchei Noyam. So Tosfos says, because let's say, for example, fine, that would mean that she shouldn't have to wait if Bechlau, let's say Reuven's mother was not even pregnant yet, then fine, you could say that. But what if when Reuven died, his mother was pregnant with another child, and it turned out that child turned out to be a boy? Then you would think, well, her mother-in-law is already pregnant. Maybe she should have to wait and see whether her mother-in-law has a boy. And if so, then there should be a zika, and we're saying that you don't need to. On the other hand, if Levi was born, we're going to have later in the Masechta that if Levi was born even a short time before Reuven passed away, then there is in fact a Zika. And then in fact, yeah, if he's the only other brother, then Esther is going to have to wait a long time before she can do Chalitza or Yibum. But if he wasn't even born yet, then not. And the Gemara explains, by the way, since we're mentioning the Pasuk says, Ki Yeshu Achim Yachdav. So the Ki Yeshu Achim means we said they have to be contemporary. Yachdav, we also learn, means miyuchodim benachla, means they have to be united in nachla, meaning that they could inherit one from the other. Prafla ochiv minaim, as opposed to, that teaches us that yibum does not apply to a brother from the mother's side. Meaning, if in our scenario over here, Reuven and Shimon shared the same mother but not the same father, then there wouldn't be any Yibum at all. Then Shimon would be also in Esther because she's his brother's wife without there being a mitzvah of Yibum. We learn that from the word Yachda. Actually, the Ritva points out, based on the continuation of the Gemara, that really what you need is, in order for there to be Yibum, you need, in order for there to be a Zika, you need that they need to be miyuchodim benachla, really in two senses. number one, that they could inherit from each other, as opposed to, we're saying, brothers from the same mother, where if one of them passes away without children, the other one doesn't inherit him. And it also means that they inherit in common from the same ancestor, meaning, as opposed to, the Gemara is going to talk about soon, for example, about an uncle and a nephew. Now, an uncle and a nephew could conceivably inherit from each other. If the uncle passes away childless, the nephew inherits him, but they're not inheriting in common from the same ancestor, because the nephew would be inheriting through his father, whereas the uncle inherits directly from the grandfather. So that's what we learned from the word yachid. Rabba Omar. So Rabba says you don't need to learn that from the word yachdav that they have to be paternal brothers, but rather achim and av yalach ach va'ach v'mevnei yachdav. We can learn it by exeder shava on the word achim that it mentions in connection with the sons of Yaakov, where here it says ki yeshu achim yachdav. Yaakov's son, when they go and meet Yosef, they describe him as kulonu ki anoshim achim ana, or not ki anoshim achim ana. Actually, that's different. Pasuk, but whatever. There's a pasuk by Yaakov's son, where they describe Shneim also Avadecha Achim Anachnu Bnei Avinu. There's two different pasukim over there where they call themselves Achim. So therefore, we make a Gzeder Shava Malahalim Mina Av V'loy Mina Aim. Now, by Yaakov's sons, they were brothers all from the father's side. Yaakov is their common father, but they had different mothers. Afkan Mina Av V'loy Mina Aim. The same way over here for Yibum, all you need is that they're brothers from the father's side. You don't need them to be brothers from the mother's side. So the Gemara says v'leilach ach va'ach v'me'arayas. So why don't we instead learn, if we have the Gzeder Shava, why don't we instead learn from the word och that it says in connection with arayas, where it says that you're not allowed to have relations with eshes ochicha, with your brother's wife. And later on in the Masechta, we're going to talk about that issue applies equally whether it's your brother from your father, from your father's side, or from your mother's side. So why don't we learn the Gzeder Shava and say by the same token, Yibum should apply to a brother from either side? The answer is done in Achim Me Achim, being done in Achim Me Ochicha. Because the difference is when it comes to Yibum, it says Achim. When it comes to Bnei Yaakov, it also says Achim. When it comes to Arayis, it says Ochicha. So it's not the same word. So therefore, we can't learn that Gzeder Shava. So the Gemara says, "My nachmina." So what's the difference? So what if it's not exactly the same word? Hotonad veda bishmal b'shava koyin of va koyin zui shiva zui bia. We actually have an example where we use exeder shava that's not even the same word, not even the same shurish. Where one, when it talks about a house with saras, where one pasuk says the koyin returns, and then another one says the koyin comes. So you have over there, you have the whole situation over there with a house with saras, where sometimes it has to be demolished, sometimes you have to scrape off the tzaras and put in and take out the stones and put in new stones and replaster the wall. And we learn by this Zeder Shava that the Pasuk doesn't say explicitly. So the Pasuk says that the Kohen comes at the end of the second week and he finds the tzaras there, he tears down the house. But actually we learn from this Zeder Shava that not always, that would only be if at the end of the first week they had scraped off the wall and replaced the stones, etc. And then the tzaras came back in the second week, then they would demolish the house. But let's say the tzaras had just remained as is at the end of the first week, and then at the end of the second week, they scraped the house, etc. Then you wouldn't tear down the house yet. You would only scrape it and so forth, and then leave it for a third week and see what happens during the third week, whether the tzaras goes away or whether it comes back. Anyway, so we see over there that we have a Gzeder Shava with words that are not even the same. V'shav and uva. So what's the problem making a Gzeder Shava between Achim and Achicha? The answer is, as the Gemara answers, and the Gemara brings up this point in many places, and the answer is always the same. Where there's no other word available for the Gzeder Shava, then yeah, we'll use a different word, a different form of the word, or even in this case, a different shurish. But if you have a place where you have the same word, then and then we're going to use the one that's the same word rather than the one that's a different word. So if we have a choice between making a Gzeder Shava from Achim to Achim or between Achim to Ochicha, we're going to pick Achim to Achim, and therefore that means that we're going to end up saying that it means only brothers from the father's side, like Yaakov's sons were. Svarim on Kolam of the Gemara explained that not always did the Chachamim have, when they learned Gzeder Shava, not always did they learn all the details of it. Sometimes, for example, they just learned the words that are involved in the Gzeder Shava, but not the location where those words are, and they had to figure that out for themselves, which is what the Gemara is doing over here. Given that we know there's Gzeder Shava on the word Achim, where we have to figure out logically where the other end of it is going to be. Okay. So the question is, v'leilach ach v'ach v'miloit. Instead, why don't we learn, if we're saying that we have to learn from the word achim, well, we have the word achim in connection with Loit and Avraham. Dichtiv ki anoshim achim anochnu. Avraham says to him, we're brothers, they were actually uncle and nephew. So we should learn from that then, that achim for this purpose, as far as Arias, and as far as Yibum, means an uncle and a nephew. The answer is mistaber b'nei Yaakov havalei lemelach. It's more logical to learn from the sons of Yaakov mishum de matni, because the word achim over there in the pasuk is extra. Mida havalei lemichtav shneim aser avodecha b'nei avinu. After all, they're talking to Yosef. They could have just said, "Your servants are 12, the sons of our father." And of course, if they're the sons of the same father, then they are brothers. And instead they added the word achim. That means, therefore, that word achim is extra in the pasuk, and therefore we can use it for gzeira shava. Now, so the Gemara points out. So the itzuch lemichtav achim, the itzuch lemichtav yachdav. Now the fact is, we said before we have the word yachdav in the pasuk about Yibum, and we said that yachdav also means that they can inherit from each other. So once we have that, of course it means not brothers from the mother's side, because brothers from the mother's side can't inherit each other. If one of them passes away childless, then the inheritance goes back to his father, and then it goes to his father's other children, not to his half brother from his mother's side. So once we have the word yachdav, why do we need the gzeira shava? So the answer is, we need both. The e kotzav rachmana achim. If we only had the word achim, havam in a leil of ach va'ach v'miloit, then indeed you would think that we should learn from loit and say that it applies to uncle and nephew as well. B'chitema loy matni. So you're going to answer, what are you talking about? The one by loit is not necessarily extra. It's needed for the simple sense of the pasuk that Avraham is telling him, look, we're brothers. Why should we be fighting? Loye, indeed, afnuye. As a matter of fact, yes, it is most certainly mukna. Loye, afnuye matni, it most certainly is mukna. Mida havalei lemichtav reyim. Because after all, Avraham could have expressed the same idea without mentioning the word achim. He could have said, ki anoshim reyim anachnu, we're men who are friends. Uchtiv achim, and instead, the pasuk uses the word achim, shma min ala afnuye. So therefore, so you could say the word achim by loit is also extra, and therefore, just the same way as we learn gzeira shava from achim by Yibum to achim by Bnei Yaakov, and say that it means paternal brothers, exactly the same way we could have learned gzeira shava from Yibum to loit and Avraham, and say therefore that achim includes uncle and nephew. So therefore, that's not good enough. Kosev Rachmana Yachdav. Therefore, the pasuk also had to mention the word Yachdav, where Yachdav implies that they both inherit from the same person. Because, in other words, the idea is, so if we have Loit and Avraham, let's say, if Terach dies, then Avraham will inherit him. Loit is not going to inherit from Terach directly. He inherits through his father, Haran. And if, let's say, for example, Haran dies while Avraham and Loit are alive, then Avraham can inherit him, because then what happens is Loit can inherit him because he's his son. If Loit is not around, Avraham inherits, but not directly from Haran. Rather, what happens is it goes back to Terach, and then it's split up among all of Terach's surviving sons. So, okay, it could happen. Avraham is the only one. But in other words, they're not directly receiving their Yerusha through the same person. So therefore, we need the word Yachdav for that. Where they're united in Nachla, that they divide up one Nachla, as opposed to Loit and Avraham, they wouldn't be dividing up one Nachla. And the Ikos Rahmana Yachdav. So, on the other hand,
so when you have two or three brothers from one mother, they don't inherit directly. It has to go back to the father.
So when, in general, brothers from the mother don't inherit each other at all, they'll inherit from their mother. But when one of the brothers themselves dies, then we see, does he have any children? And if not, then it goes to his father, not to his mother. And then it goes to his father's other children. So if any of them happen to be full brothers, then yeah, they're yarshining, but not through their mother. They're yarshining by virtue of their father. But if the father had multiple wives, then the children are only half brothers. They don't share the same mother, and no, they're not going to be yarshining from each other, and they're not going to be yarshining from the mother. Yeah. But on the other hand, but if we only have the word Yachtav, then maybe you would think the word Yachtav might imply that they have to be full brothers and that you don't do Yibum or Chalitza when they're only half brothers from the father's side. So therefore we need the Gzeira Shava as well. But Gemara says, Vahoma Hechi Tesi. Why would you even think that Yibum should require them to be full brothers such that you need a Gzeira Shava to tell you that not? Yibum Menachma Tova Rachmana. After all, the Pasuk makes Yibum depend on Nachla, because the Pasuk goes on to say that the Yavam Yokum Hashem Ochiv Ames, he stands in the place of his dead brother, which means we're going to say later on in our Perek that it means, among other things, that he inherits his brother's property. So automatically we see that Yibum is connected to Nachla. The Nachla min Av, v'lo min Aim, and Nachla goes from the father, not from the mother. So why would we even think, if we didn't have the Zeta Shava from the word Achim, just the word Yachta by itself ought to be enough to tell us that it's enough that they're brothers from the father's side? Why are we saying that Yachta itself would have meant that they're full brothers and we need the Zeta Shava Achim to tell us otherwise? The answer is the Nachla min Av, v'lo min Aim. The answer is Itzrich, we still need it. Sakhda Chamina, because after all, you would think, after all, the whole concept of Yibum is a tremendous chidush. The commissary erva gabe. After all, you're allowing him to marry a woman who previously was an erva to him because she's his brother's wife, and normally a brother's wife is an erva. Ema adami yachti ba'avo v'ima. So maybe they need to be united in both father and mother. Maybe to be matir, that isur. So yeah, and Yibum has to do with Nachla, and the Yavam inherits his dead brother's property. But maybe to be able to do that, they need to be full, and to be able to be matir, the isur of Eish HaSach, maybe they would need to be full brothers. Sricha, so therefore the Pasuk had to tell us with the Gzeira Shava that it applies even when they're only half brothers, that they only share a father, but they do have to share a father because otherwise they're not miyuchod and menachla at all. Otherwise they don't share the same nachla at all because they wouldn't be inheriting from the same, they wouldn't be splitting an inheritance from the same person. So we'll continue tomorrow. Well, the Gemara is going to start a new topic, which is going to relate back to our Mishnah. Yishkoyach, everyone.
Yishkoyach.